no interest in that. And I don't know, it was, for some reason, struck me as it just didn't strike me.
Were the fraternities very well established at that time?
Was the what?
The fraternities established?
Oh, very well.
Deeply?
That's another thing. It's interesting for me to look at you and to realize that you don't know that just a matter of... well, let me get tight dates here a little bit better. Well, this is 75, 65. I think go back 15 years when the fraternities and sororities were a necessity for a certain number of the students. They had respect, always with some variation, and they were thought of well by the administration because they helped in the housing, and they were morally, in every way, a good influence on the whole. There are exceptions, but now it's all changed. As you perhaps know, in the exact dates or years back is a little hazy in my mind, but somewhere is along in the early 60s, this all began to change. Not only was there a change in the administration view, but of course there was a change of the, I won't say the student, but society began to look at things differently. And your little closed, secret societies just didn't have a rating, and this spread to your colleges and campuses with the result that up then to about 5 years ago, and I don't know, I think there's a little swing back now as I get the picture, but up until we'll say about 5 years ago, about 1970, the campuses practically left the campus, left the scene, and sororities too. My wife has long been interested in the Alpha Z Delta. That was a local sorority way back in the 20s and 30s. And she still keeps contact with that group. Well, that group finally sold their house. They're now, I'm not quite sure, that they've just rented an apartment and have a little nucleus, they hope, of a group again. They have common ideals and so on. How it worked out, I have no idea. But there were other influences that were coming just about the time that those buildings that you referred to last night, being built in 1920, although somewhat later, but along about this time, and certainly then under, well, it started before Hannah, but in the time of Shaw, Robert Shaw, as president, we began to build dormitories that began to began to compete with your fraternities for housing. You could go into a fraternity, or you could go into one of the dormitories, and you would have better housing than you would have in some fraternities. Some were very good fraternities and sororities. But you see, you had a competition there of state-supported, tax-free property being used in that manner. So there was a competition there. Now this helped to, I won't say drive, it wasn't intentional in that way. Simply the school wanted to supply more housing and fraternities and your private initiative. I can remember when Anna would say, well, I wish the heavens they would build a private initiative, private money would build housing for students. Well, they would. So what happens is that, of course, when Hannah comes along, he takes this whole idea of borrowing money and to a very high amount, great amounts. He borrows money and builds up a tremendous housing. I think the school houses more of its students than any other university in the country. Some 23,000 students are housed here, some of them with their families.
Just kind of getting back, it seems to me, I remember in the course of my reading that housing at that time, most of the on-campus housing was women's dormitories, and then the men found housing off-campus?
Well, there were some sororities off-campus, because, again, I refer to my wife's sorority. It was off-campus, and it was a reputable group. Going back, jumping around, but going back to your men, of course, there'd only been one fraternity that had been given a site on the campus, as you know that story. And that was the Union Lit, it was called, the Union Literary Society. That building stood exactly where, as you go into the, just about, as you go into the rear entrance, the south entrance off the bridge into the library. That building stood right there, right at that entrance of that building. At Union Literary Building, you'll see pictures of it in either the old or Coon's history. But that was the only one. And I think the school rued the day that it did that, although it had no trouble getting out of it, because I think, if I remember that story right, that society sort of just, as societies do, they rise and they fall, and they rise and they fall, and sometimes they go all out of business, and sometimes just half out of business. I think the Union Lit went completely out. I don't think there's any remnant of that, to my knowledge. But you're right, Morrill Hall, of course, was the housing. When I was in school, between 1921 and 1925, I worked in the kitchen of the eating club on the fourth floor of that building, on the southeast end of that building, on the top floor. Worked there in the kitchen for my two meals a day at least, three meals a day maybe, for at least 2 years, I think going into the third year. But women were housed there. They were housed in, of course, always in Abbott Hall. This was a stronghold of the women in my time, in your 20s, until, well, wait a minute, not until. It was finally went over into the music. Music finally used it for instructional purposes, and then it was torn down for that annex that was built.
There was Wells Hall, wasn't there, across the road from Abbott, and wasn't there the first Wells Hall back there at that time?
Well, Wells Hall, to my knowledge, is always a men's dormitory, of course. And that dormitory stood just where the later part of the library was built, as you know, just west of the still-standing Olds Hall. And that stood there for... Of course, the first Wells Hall burned down, and that was put up, as you'll learn in either Beale's history or Madison Coombe. And that was a repetition of not the same building. The first building was one of those god-awful. Architecture was a low ebb when College Hall, the first boarding house, Coombe says, Paul Saints West long after the building burned. And then there was an awful building constructed for the botany laboratory. You'll only see the picture of it in Beale's catalog, and maybe in Coon's. And then you just mentioned the Wells Hall, those towers, and, something very, very objectional about the whole thing, but that's the way it was at that time. That was the kind of architecture which you had. Quite different from what you have today. Mm-hmm. And the construction was so different. Although in the time that you're speaking of, now going this up to 24, 25, of course you have two buildings which were well built. The museum building, that's a building of concrete and steel and what we would call a permanent building. The only thing that's going to take that down is the human being someday with a ball and chain. And that's true of the Home Economics Building, built about that same time, and it's true of the Union Building. Those are substantial buildings. So far different. I've just been trying to get down the short statement of the first three buildings that were put up. They were so badly constructed Well, they, for instance, the College Hall, this revered first building to teach agriculture in the country. Well, they finally found when they tore it down that the basement wall was built right over a stump. Maybe you've heard the story.
Mm-hmm.
And all that kind of thing. And it practically fell down when they began to take it down in 1918. And of course, the boarding house burned in about 1883, I think it was. Good thing, I believe. But then they put up Williams Hall on the site of that. No, not it, not found the site. It rather between the site of where the boarding house was first built and College Hall. In between, they put up Williams Hall. And that was another from all pictures, architecturally very, very, without much worth or value.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't building very well either. But perhaps one thing that I remember about my early 2 years, particularly, I don't remember the last year or two so much, because, of course, as you became a junior and senior, you weren't bothered so much. But there was a great deal of hazing in the years 1921, 22, probably in 23, and probably later than that, but I didn't notice it. A great deal of hazing, all kinds of antics of one kind or another, chasing students around the campus, making them use their pot lids, just a little cap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This took up a great deal, by the way, this took up a great deal of the fraternity's energies, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I always, my family, my mother and sisters came here my last year, and I lived with them the last year. But the other year or two, I lived in homes with nice rooms and good groups of young people.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my experience of, I remember my first night when I landed in East Lansing. I'd never been here before, my first night. I came out on the streetcar. I came down from Traverse City, Michigan, where my home was. And the friends that I came down with, and two other women students who were going on to Western Michigan, I believe, what's now called Western Michigan. And they let me off right down on the corner of Michigan and Washington. And I took the streetcar out. And I met a friend here who had gotten a room for us. And I remember that first evening. Well, that first evening was spent in a building which stood just about where that little monument stands at the Abbott Street entrance on present-day Grand River Avenue, right at about the side of that monument, or perhaps in front of it, because the street was doubled in width there. But there was a house-like building that was first used as the first hospital. Well, when I came to school here in 1921, it was being used by the YMCA as a social. So we went in there, and I remember yet of playing checkers underneath a unshaded electric light bulb in what was perhaps the living room of that home that was used as a. But beyond that, you see, I'm one of these mongrels. I was out of school then. I worked for 7 years between my undergraduate and graduate work. I then went on to Harvard University. And of course, my memories of Harvard are much more, I don't know, vivid in my mind. And I think a much more pleasant experience than I had here. And so I have that little problem in my recalling that Harvard was completely foreign to this place here. And I was more mature, I think this has a lot to do with a young person's ability to get anything and or everything out of life until that maturing process somehow comes along and causes you all at once. I don't know whether it happens all at once, but you become conscious, it seems to me, all at once. And somehow you can understand things. Things seem to be a lot clearer than they ever were before. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it was with me when I finally got to Harvard 7 years later in 1933, right at the depth of the Depression. And that was that's an experience there. That I have great respect for, great feeling for. Not to say I didn't enjoy myself here. I think I had more fun up there in the women's eating club kitchen. You know, it's just, talk about a club. We had a club there. And by the way, it was a mixed club, too. We didn't think anything of it in those days, but it was boys and girls who worked in that kitchen. We had an awful lot of fun. Went to dances together, threw biscuits across the kitchen at one another, and washed and scrubbed pans and pots and dishes for Keith. Some classes I remember, but not so well. I don't know why that is, but I don't have the memory for my classes here at Michigan State that I have at Harvard. I had some experiences there that are unforgettable. I've never had the experience here at Michigan State of having the student get upon his chair and upon the table in front of it and stand up and clap until the professor who had given the lectures all term long left the room on the last day. This is an ovation which I'd never seen. And this is what happened to Dean Edgell when he got through with, I forget what the art course is called, but it was the history of art, of sculpture, of painting, and architecture, from the fall of the Roman Empire down to the present time, which is quite a mouthful.
Yes.
And he gave that so beautifully and so well by slides. One slide, next slide, I remember how he did it, and he was so precise. And they say he worked. He worked nights to 3 o'clock on every lecture. It was evident. Mm-hmm. He could be what used to be called the old Chautauqua lecturer, because he was not only instructive, but highly entertaining. I remember that. But here, I don't remember particularly. I do remember Halligan, of course. I knew Halligan in landscape architecture very well. Kindly old fellow, but I suppose I learned later that he simply didn't know landscape architecture as I finally found it to be. And so I have that sort of a feeling there for the instruction. Of course, that wasn't the only instruction, but it's the only one I remember very, very well, really.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what kind of social events did they have or at this time?
Well,
kind of,
yeah.
How was that?
Well, yes, I can't compare them to social events today or 5 years or 10 years ago, excepting that I think that they're not at all like they were at that time. There was much more. Of course, you have a matter of size here. But this may not make as much difference as I suggest. But at that time, we were much more of a family. And when the school had a party, had a dance party, well, I'll tell you, everybody was there, and all the deans were there, and the president was probably there, and we were over in the armory. Now, you don't know where the armory stood just exactly where the music building stands. That is the first part of the music building. And that's where the dances were held. Although a few were held in the was the fourth floor of Ag Hall. There's a larger room up there. It can't be very large. I meant to go up there, but I haven't. But a few smaller parties were held there. But they were card parties. That is, you went and you you made a point of dancing with your girlfriend's friends, or you all would be sure to dance with the dean or the dean's wife. And there's this formality there, which I'm sure is completely gone. I don't think that you have it today. I saw the change here. I had the interesting experience in my working here for the university. I came here in January 1946. The war had just been over, just had gotten over. And I came here in 46. Within 2 years, President Hanna at that time, I think within 2 years, he was holding what was called the Spartan Roundtables. And the Spartan Roundtables were a dinner which he held and supported, and to which he invited the elected leaders of your sororities, your fraternities, your larger housing units at that time. Mason Abbott was up at that time, for instance. A couple of the women dormitories up. Anyhow, he'd invite those people to come in. We'd, or they, what is it, the green room, I think, of the Union Building? He would hold a dinner meeting. First we'd have dinner, and then he would introduce everybody. Sometimes he can do it, you know. Hanna was a remarkable person in many ways, and that was one of the ways that he could remember a face and a name. And he could go right down a table of, I've seen him with a group of 75 people, or there more or less, and name every one of them just exactly right, never make a mistake. And he would introduce everybody anyway, and the group of students that he would invite would number, oh, probably, this varied, but this varied from, of course, they're always the representative of the state news, of the student government. Those were always there, too. And then, with the students then invited, would be about, I was counting here on a sheet that I have, an invitation. Oh, around 15 or 16 of faculty people, faculty people, yes, or administrative, administrative people, who could answer the questions that the students would ask about the institution. Always athletics. We always had questions about what kind of a football team we're going to have. Anyhow, this and that and the other thing. And Biggie Munt always just loved to get up and talk. And, of course, the dean of students always had to be there. And when there was a dean of women, there was always the woman representing the women. Of course, she was there. But then there would be some deans there, but not necessarily all the deans. But I had the experience over 23 years of going to those dinners. They were held about three a term, which gives us the pulse of the student body, because we try to answer them fairly and squarely about why things were as they were. And they were very hectic days. Now, I'm speaking now of not your time that you're interested in, but the time from the end of the World War II until 5 years ago. Those were hectic times, because the student, the faculty, the visitor, could not tell where in the world we were building and just the way things were going. And we have to constantly answer the question, what in the world is going to be dug up next and what building is going to be built next? Well, it's not to be wondered at, because as I look at my listing here of a building, of major buildings, I haven't taken any addition, and there were many, many additions made to good bit of buildings, like the veterinary, Oh dear. What's the veterinary building over there called?
Would that be any, Giltner?
Giltner, that's right, good. Giltner Hall. There were many additions made to that. I think there were three or four. Well, I only count that as one major building. Well, I got 125 buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't count all, I don't count, when I say Spartan Village, I count that as one major building. Well, it's made up of hundreds of apartments. And, I should say a couple thousand apartments and hundreds of buildings. Well, anyhow, it kept us busy because the student, and the student, of course, he always had his troubles and his bothers. There weren't paths here, and oh yeah, of course, always the police department was always there because there was always questions of policing problems of the automobile, the rights of the student to drive on campus, and also was always being, I think that's died down a great deal. It was seeing this growth. You would look out on that campus, you'd say, well, why can't you park some cars over there? Well, it's because our plans that we had over in the president's office and the state board office showed that that was to be a site for a building, and we didn't want to put the money into parking. But anyhow, we had to develop the campus in some rational manner.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed rational to us anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And it did usually, I think, to the student. We had a very good reaction to the student. It was the only way that Hannah, in a greatly growing body, after all, Hannah was here. I forget what the student body was when he came in here. Of course, he was secretary for 6 years or 7 years before he was president. But I suppose when he came, there was 35, 40, maybe 4,000 students. I'm a little unclear about that, 4,000 or 5,000 students. Well, of course, when he left the student body here, 42,000, but thereabouts. So it was a tremendous, you can't imagine the conflict and the effort made by a person like Hannah and all of the administration to get to the young person reasonable facilities to first live in, but much more important for him to learn in. And he did it every way, by gifts, by legislative grants, and by borrowing money. And he could only borrow money by making his dormitories and food services pay out. The student sometimes could not understand this, you know, why this and that couldn't be done. But of course, the fact that behind every one of these things is an economic problem. But now I'm speaking of a later date than the one that you're speaking of. There was a time, and I can't put my finger on it, but there was a time, I find it in the board minutes, there was a time when the board seriously considered giving up all dormitory living on campus. They were ready to throw up their hands. The whole problem of administering the dormitories and food service was to feed anybody, you may know that, is a problem. You can't satisfy the human being, it's just difficult. And to house them, it's much the same way. You build it this way, and yes, it would be an answer to some, but not an answer to all. You build another one, and you change. Every one of the dormitories, if you were to make a study of just the dormitories, the changes that went on from dormitory to dormitory would be very interesting. I think Henry Foster ought to do that. Of course, he was head of the food services and dormitories almost all the time that I was here. You would know the economics of that whole problem. And it was a, well, difficult one. Athletics. Going now back to your 24 and 25, the football team. And all athletics. Now, you see, now, wait a minute, I'm going to have to explain myself here on this one. I'm saying this, I suppose, no, because I was a tennis fan, and I was on the tennis team for at least 3 years. I don't think I went out freshman year, but the other time I was on the team, and my last year I was captain of the team. And we thought a great deal of our sports, and I think it was more universal than it is today. And I think, even though I've never been a great football fan, I rode the railroad down to '68, '69. Of course, your Vietnam, well, we'll get into many things here, but your Vietnam was reacting here. And your student body was a problem. Now, this Hannah was running into. Hannah was a... I say there was some... temper this a little bit. But he was of the old school, John Hannah. That is, he had certain moral. It bothered him, you know, to have your student... make an exhibition of himself in front of the women's dormitories, girl and boy with their arms around one another to stand there for, you wouldn't know this, but back, when the veterans began to return, you see, there were older people, we had a whole influx of older men, older students that came in at that time, and constant shifting of morality. And he found this very hard to put up with. And when you get along here to this he couldn't stand, of course, the student defacing anything. This is just something. Of course, I and you don't like it, don't stand for it either, we'll say. But this hurt him badly. And he was running right into this thing, student body-wise. And he was losing out fast, but the thing that was was shaking him badly was the fact that he had lost the cooperation of the State Board of Trustees through their divisiveness and their political mindedness about '68 and '69, and this he just threw up his hands that fine. But there never, and I've been going over the 125 years of this college campus, there never have been such advances made, although as you go back on the history of a college like this, there were some grim times, and the presidents and the secretaries and the faculty and the student body who stood up and had to put up with the conditions that they had. It is certainly remarkable. Some remarkable presidents. The first president, Williams, how he would even stand the 2 years that he was here, I don't know. And then along came Abbott afterwards, who stayed the longest. There was one or two smaller ones in there, but Abbott was the next one who stayed about 20 years, 19 years. But those men all had great fortitude, I can tell you, had courage. They had to have, because things were hard to come by. But Hannah, again, going back to that aspect, Hannah came just at the right time. The influx of students, this was assured him. All the tables, we used to watch them. He was a great student of birth rates and the waves that you could see coming out of a birth rate. He kept watching that. And he knew when we built a dormitory, he had to go down to Ann Arbor to borrow money, have to be from an Ann Arbor bank. Well, he didn't get to go down there by just pounding the table asking for $2 million to build, or $4 million to build, Shaw Hall. you had to go down there and show that in another 2-3 years that we were going to have so many students on campus. And we could charge them so much and we could pay their debt back in so much time. Well, it came at just the right time that the great influx of students and his ability to show, not his ability to show, but under his father-in-law, which is another interesting story, but under his father-in-law, Shaw, this institution had gotten to have a good name as far as financing was concerned. They lived within their budget, they didn't overspend, they were not in debt, and didn't get into debt. And of course, a banker, this is the way he gauges them. And this looked like a good deal to those bankers down there. And to my knowledge, this is a matter of record, you'd have to go back and find it, but to my knowledge, at one time here, it was pretty nearly $100 million that this school had borrowed from the Ann Arbor Trust and had to pay back every bit of it. And it all had to come from those dollars that you as a student paid for your board and room. If a ramp had to be built, and two of them were finally built, I had a plan which showed that we ought to build 5 of them. When it came to that, it was again a case of, he had a great faculty for figuring out how to finance things. Well, in those days, of course, there was a matter of, for the first time, the faculty member had to begin to pay, what was it, $20 a year? I think it's $20 a year now, isn't it? Yeah. And the student had to pay, it was very small, $5 just to bring a car on the campus. But it was out of those fees, out of the parking fees, that, of course, a ramp had to be financed. And he was able to see how that could be done. Mm.
Heard, of course, some of the kind of stories, a few of the stories about Hannah, such as like whenever he had a tour around of dignitaries around the campus, he'd always end it at the Quonset huts to drive home the point.
Yes, sure, it was his way of showing, how poorly, or he might have put the other aspect on it, how well. I can remember the first year that I was here, 1946, that summer, that the Jennison Fieldhouse was covered with cots. And that's where a lot of your men students slept there. I don't remember clearly, but that summer or that fall, toilets were over. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. I thank you very much for.
Well, I don't know whether this was worth very much, but anyhow, that's.
Thanks just the same. I really appreciate it.
Can I put your name down?